Boras v. Holder. Mr. Bratton.
May it please the court, I'm Scott Bratton. I represent the petitioner Mohammed Boras in this case. The issue in front of the court is straightforward. Mr. Boras contends that the immigration judge abused his discretion.
Could you keep your voice up, please?
Yes. Mr. Boras contends that the immigration judge abused his discretion in this case by denying his request for a continuance to allow his ex-wife's appearance in court to testify. We would submit that the denial in this case was made without rational explanation. The issue in the case before the immigration court was whether Mr. Boras could establish by a preponderance of the evidence that his marriage was entered into in good faith. So a key part of that would be the testimony of his ex-wife, who intended to come to court and could not.
Did anyone suggest that if the immigration judge would have difficulty squeezing a continuance into his busy schedule that he just could have called her?
I don't think telephonic testimony was something that came up in the immigration court proceedings.
We've had cases in the past where the immigration judge would call up an expert witness, for example, and no one objected. You know, it would be irregular in a district court proceeding, but there are no particular formalities for the immigration court. So why wouldn't that be, because it was important for your client to hear from his ex-wife, so why not, you know, say to the judge, if you don't have time for a hearing, couldn't you just, you know, speak to her on the phone?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't, Your Honor, it wasn't something that was suggested in the case.
Well, whose responsibility is that?
Well, I mean, I think in this particular situation, Boras could have suggested that. Now, whether that was going to work would be problematic for a couple of reasons. Number one, due to her work issues, it sounded like she wasn't going to be able to take that kind of block of time.
Well, that raises a more fundamental question about whether some accommodation could be made. There was a year's notice for this hearing, right? And she said when she advised the court that she couldn't come, that she had only recently learned of the date of the hearing and couldn't change her schedule. So why was she not notified until the very last minute?
That's unclear from the record. It's also unclear because it was never addressed in the immigration court proceedings when she actually learned, because the facts does say she just learned of the hearing. Does just learned mean a month ago, a week ago? It isn't clear from the record, and that wasn't an issue that was brought up with in the immigration court case. So I'm not sure, but it doesn't look like from her facts that it would have made a difference had she known a year in advance or
She's saying that she got late notice and couldn't change her work schedule. That's why she couldn't be present.
Well, they had staffing shortages where they only had two people in our unit. And
right.
She was forced to train someone for the next 6 to 8 weeks, I believe.
The bottom line is, if there had been sufficient notice to her, perhaps some accommodation could have been made. And it wasn't. And the motion for a continuance didn't come until the very end of the hearing, after the claimant had testified. Everybody knew that she was going to be a key witness. The only issue is the bona fide nature of this marriage.
Yes, and Mr. DeFranco, the counsel for Mr. Boras, did bring it up at the start of the proceeding that she was not going to be available, that he had received something. And then at the end, after Mr. Boras testified, he stated that, you know, that she wasn't going to be able to come. Can I have a continuance to secure her testimony? I'll admit maybe that's not how I would have done it, but that's how it happened in the case. And, you know, that's what the record suggests. But in looking at the immigration judge's decision, is essentially that he states, I don't continue cases set for a final hearing except for an emergency. And then he goes on to state that...
Did he say he didn't have time, or did he just say he had a policy?
He said that he does not continue cases set for a final hearing except for an emergency. And then he goes on to state, if she can't come to court because of work, then she's not able to come to court. indicating that that's not a that's
did
not
he give a reason a for his rule? It doesn't grant a continuance unless there's an emergency. Did he say, "I'm too busy"? You know.
He didn't say anything.
Immigration judges have extraordinarily heavy caseloads, don't they?
They have a significant caseload, yes.
And he had set this time aside a year earlier for this hearing to resolve this issue, right?
Correct.
And Mr. Boris's counsel had known 5 days ahead of time that the ex-wife wasn't going to be there, right?
That's correct.
And didn't ask for a continuance till the very end of the whole hearing, right?
That's correct.
I've got to say, I find the immigration judge's impatience understandable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do want to address that, and I addressed it in the briefs, but I do want to address that particular point that Mr. DeFranco did find out 5 days before the hearing. Had he put in a request for a continuance, it would have been his office is in Columbus. It would have been submitted via Federal Express, and best case scenario, received 4 days before the hearing. Assuming it makes it to the court that day, which is assuming a lot when you're dealing with immigration court and filings, that would have been 4 days. The government gets 10 days under the practice manual to respond, so this issue couldn't have been addressed.
When things come up at the last minute, you can do phone calls, right?
Phone calls to whom? The court or DHS?
And counsel, yes.
Yeah, I mean, you could attempt to contact chief counsel, and again, that's assuming they're going to contact you back when you call them, which isn't always the case. But in any event, they're obviously going to oppose the request. They did, right? I mean, they didn't agree to the request.
Not at the end of the hearing, no.
Well, I understand.
And this approach sort of maximizes the waste of time, right?
I mean, again, this isn't how I would have done it, but under the circumstances, had Mr. DeFranco sent the document to the court, that's still only 4 days in advance of the hearing. Whether the judge isn't going to continue the case, what he's going to do is he's going to hear at least the testimony of the respondent in this particular case, Mr. Boris. Then he can set it over if he determines that isn't sufficient.
Right.
This has the
air of a Hail Mary pass, right? After Mr. Boris's testimony, and there are the various problems with the tax returns and all kinds of problems developed during his testimony, the request for a continuance to bring in a witness to rescue the case after it's all over looks pretty desperate.
Well, I would disagree that there are a whole lot of problems there. I think his testimony was consistent with the documentation with respect to the bona fides of the marriage. There was an issue with the tax returns as they weren't signed. Mr. Boris testified that his wife handled that since she would have been the
didn't show any of his income, right?
They did not show any of his income.
Which is what you would expect if the couple were combining their finances and living.
It looks to me like he was stating he was unemployed on those taxes and not declaring any income on any tax return. At least that's the way that I read the record. One last point I want to briefly address, which is another troubling portion of the board's decision, and that's with respect to the board incorrectly states that Mr. Boris's ex-wife did not state whether she could provide testimony at a future hearing. In fact, that's contradicted by the facts that's contained at page 146 of the administrative record. She states, "I am hoping we can get a continuance to this hearing date so I am able to attend the hearing for Muhammad." So she's clearly indicating that she wants a continuance so that she can appear. That directly contradicts the board's decision and one of its main grounds for denying the request for or finding that there was not good cause for the request for a continuance was she didn't state that she would be available at a future hearing date by telephonic testimony or in person, when in fact the facts indicate that she did state that.
What was that, page 146? What is it?
That's the facts.
Is it her testimony? Is it somebody else's account of a phone call with her or what?
No, it's her fax to Mr. DeFranco that was submitted to the court.
The fax, okay.
It was
a facsimile. I misunderstood.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bratt. Yeah. Mr. Sherman, Ms. Sherman?
Good morning, Your Honors. Jessica Sherman on behalf of the respondent, Eric Holder.
Now, is it your proposition that this was a fraudulent marriage or a failed marriage?
The issue is whether he showed his marriage was bona fide.
No, answer my question. Is your position it's a fraudulent marriage or a failed marriage?
A fraudulent marriage.
Doesn't matter if it's a failed marriage, right?
If it was a failed marriage but entered into with the intent to be a bona fide marriage.
Now, what's the evidence it wasn't... Now, what's your argument? That he paid her to marry him?
No, Your Honor. I think that the evidence before USCIS, which is not before this court for... it's not on review here, is that he entered into the marriage to obtain immigration benefits. However, the denial of the good faith marriage waiver is not reviewable.
Look,
under...
Look, there's nothing wrong with that. That's not fraud. If you go up to someone and say, look, I'd like to marry you, and, you know, frankly, I really need to get married. And she says, well, okay, I mean, you're a nice person, right? Don't have a husband, so I'll marry you. That's not fraud.
The standard for a bona fide marriage is whether the parties intended to establish a life together.
Yes, well,
but
you
it's
can
not
establish,
solely...
you can intend that, even if your motive is to get citizenship, right?
The immigrant...
Say, look, don't interrupt me. If you say to a woman, look, I want to get married, I need to get married, because I want to stay in the United States, but I really like you, and we'll have a great marriage, we'll have kids, and so on, but I'm being candid with you that one of my motives is to stay here. Now, I don't see what fraud or impropriety there is in that.
If the purpose of the marriage is solely to obtain immigration...
It's not solely in my example, right?
But that's not the issue before the court today.
Well, that's the question. What do we know about why he wanted to marry her? I don't understand it. He apparently wanted to move to her state, you know, and operate a hot dog stand, and he didn't get the right lottery... tickets, so the hot dog stand was a flop. He did try to operate the hot dog stand. If it had been a success, presumably he would have remained, right? What's the evidence to contradict that?
They didn't commingle assets. They didn't establish a life together.
A lot of spouses don't commingle assets, so it's not, why is that such a big deal? I don't understand. Look, the cases we've had in the past are cases in which the immigrant pays for a phony marriage with the understanding they're going to get divorced, right?
There's no...
I don't see what the evidence is here that it's anything but a failed marriage. You know, he's...
There is no requirement in the INA that money is exchanged in order for it to be a fraudulent marriage.
You just said we're talking about fraudulent marriages, right? Now, the fraud could be deception. He says, I'm in love with you, but actually intends to divorce her in 6 months, right? Well, what's the evidence of that?
The evidence is, I mean, it's his burden to show that they intended to
Look,
establish...
forget that. What is the evidence that when he married her, he was intending... that to dissolve the marriage because his only purpose in marrying her was to get citizenship.
In the short period of time that they were married, they spent very little time together. He was living.
I know, but there's reasons for it, like his hot dog stand. It was a failure because he didn't get a high enough, you know, lottery ticket, and there was the price. He's a cab driver, but he'd have to wait a year, you know, in order to be able to drive a cab after he got his license in her state. So there are reasons. So I don't understand, and I don't understand what the contrary evidence is.
It's his burden.
That they fudge their taxes like 50 million other people?
There's no evidence they shared assets and liabilities, that they were joining a life together as a married couple.
What
and
do you
it's
mean
his
joining
burden
a life
of pride.
Together? They were Proof. Getting married, and he was going to move there, but he had problems with the hot dog stand and then with his cab license. So I don't see what the...
Even if it's not the strongest case of marriage
evidence. Evidence. I don't see what your...
It's
as
not
I
the
say,
issue
in the
before
previous
the court
cases
today.
We've had, it's perfectly clear. You know, it's a commercial deal. Is there any evidence that he paid her anything to marry him?
There is no requirement that money is exchanged for proof of a fraudulent marriage.
Well, you've got to have some sort of evidence. I don't see what your evidence is.
The evidence is that they did not commingle assets.
Oh, look, a lot of people don't commingle assets. I don't understand that.
Ms. Sherman, is it correct that the only issue before us is whether the denial of a continuance was an abuse of discretion?
Yes, Your Honor.
The denial of what?
A continuance.
And why was it not an abuse of discretion in your view?
Mr. Boris was notified of his hearing date 7 months in advance of the date. He did nothing to secure his ex-wife's testimony until 5 days before the hearing. When he was notified that she would be unable to attend, he did nothing and just attended court 5 days later.
So why didn't the immigration judge just call her?
He never requested that she appear telephonically. It's his burden of proof. He knew
that
this evidence was essential.
Well, why doesn't the immigration judge think of it himself? I mean, doesn't he realize this is a serious case? This person being denied citizenship, and there's this, and the evidence from the wife is important. We've seen in the past where immigration judges, because they are very pressed for time, they'll get on the phone with a witness.
He didn't request the continuance till the close of his testimony.
Why doesn't the immigration judge do it on his own? Doesn't he have any sense of responsibility?
The facts didn't say that
and
she would
why
be...
And what is this business of having a rule that he never grants a continuance if there's been a hearing? What's that about?
The facts from his ex-wife didn't say that she would be available
what is that
for
rule? Where does that rule come from? Is that something in your manual for immigration judges?
What good cause means is different a year before the hearing, 5 days
no,
before
I
the
want,
hearing.
You're not answering my question. Apparently, he has a rule. Now, what's the source of this rule?
It's his understanding of what good cause means when you request a continuance at the close of testimony at the end of the hearing. In that case, if there was an emergency, he certainly would have granted.
Why isn't this an emergency? This is a key witness for the.
Because he didn't diligently pursue his rights, and 5 days before, this might have been considered a ground to continue proceedings, but he waited.
Well, what's the fussing about this? Yes, it's not well presented. The immigration bar suffers from many of the problems of the immigration court. It's not a lucrative practice. So why does the immigration judge take some minimal responsibility trying to do justice and pick up the phone?
She didn't state that she would be available for telephonic testimony, and he didn't request it. He knew that her testimony was part of his evidence, and he knew he carried the burden of proof.
Look, he screwed up. There's no question about it.
And it's
his
burden of proof.
The question is whether these immigration judges feel any sense of responsibility.
He didn't have
a... Or whether they just, play, gotcha.
The immigration judge
waited
wasn't...
too long? Too bad. Off you go to Algeria.
The immigration judge wasn't provided with a phone number or a schedule that he could reach Ms. Schreiner
well,
for her testimony.
Well, couldn't he say, look, I want to talk to her on the phone. Would you give me her phone number?
He wasn't told that she would be available for testimony. And it was
honestly,
Mr. Boris's...
Why doesn't he ask? Why did he say, look, it's too late to have a continuance. I'm all booked up. But it's your key witness. So, look, give me her phone number and tell me when I can call her and tell her I'm going to call her and I'm going to ask her some questions.
The immigration judge had a busy docket. I mean, this isn't her...
Is she busy to make a phone call?
There was no evidence that she was even available to answer the phone.
Yes, but of course that would be very telling. Suppose he says to the lawyer, I'd like to speak to her, so you give me the phone number and tell me when I can call her. And he says, well, actually, you can't call her because she's not gonna pick up the phone. She's too busy. Then the immigration judge could say, look, these people are playing games with me. I've had enough, so you're out.
Mr. Boris bore the burden of proof, and he had to diligently pursue his rights. This court has recognized in Adame that when an alien doesn't diligently pursue their case...
Yeah, you're arguing technicalities and not seeing that there's a very sensible... practical solution here, which the immigration judge didn't think of.
As our honors have noted,
telephone call.
That telephonic testimony is rare, and he needs to request it
honestly.
So that the device is
so
there.
What?
Who knows if the courtroom was equipped at that last second moment to take telephonic testimony that would then be recorded and part of the transcript in the immigration proceedings. If they didn't have the recording devices to establish that the telephone would be then recorded as part of the transcript, it would be improper that this testimony would be taken and not recorded as part of the transcript before the immigration court. If he had made the request 5 days in advance and said, can my ex-wife testify telephonically, they could have brought in whatever is required to take telephonic testimony. But when he makes it at the close of his merits hearing, without any explanation why she wasn't notified sooner and arrangements were made for her testimony, then he hasn't demonstrated good cause for a continuance. He had 7 months to obtain her testimony or make arrangements for her to present it telephonically or through an affidavit, and he did nothing. Under these circumstances, he hasn't established good cause.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Sherman. So, Mr. Bratt, does he have any time? 1 minute? Yeah.
Just briefly, with respect to the government's position that's a fraud marriage, that's contrary to what the judge said when he stated that I'm not reaching a conclusion, the respondent's marriage is a sham. That's at page 140 of the administrative record. The immigration judge in this case didn't say that he denied the request for continuance because of the timing of the request. It was denied because he stated, I don't grant these requests at any time after the trial set unless there's some sort of an emergency. If she can't come to work, then she's at work and she can't come to court. She can't come
why,
to
why
court.
Why is that unreasonable for somebody managing a busy docket?
This is someone's only chance to have a review of his case. It would have been easy to either telephonically contact the person or set the case aside for a one-hour time slot to have her testify in the future. Every immigration court I've ever been to, including the Chicago court, is equipped to take telephonic testimony. And in a case, the telephone is sitting on the judge's desk, and
delay.
I've done telephonic
Mr.
testimony.
Mr. Bratton, one of the things that seems to be epidemic in immigration practice is delays and stalling. And if we say an immigration judge doesn't have discretion to deny a continuance in this kind of case, it seems to me, tell me if I'm wrong, but that would really be an invitation to a whole new level of game playing.
Well, each case has to be looked at on its facts, and in this particular case, certainly there was no delay tactic or anything like that. Mr. Boris would want to have his case heard.
Well, of course, I know that's the story, but if that's true, then why wasn't there more of an effort to get her there first or to make even some last-minute arrangements?
Well, the record isn't clear on what efforts were made and when they were made, and that's because the judge, in three sentences, denied the continuance request and basically said, this isn't going to happen because if she can't come because she's at work, then I'm not going to grant the case. I'm not going to grant the continuance. She can't come. This discussion was not had. It would have been simple to bring all of this up to see what efforts were made. But in looking at the reasons given by the board and the IJ and denying the
request, it would have been very simple to do that at the beginning of the hearing.
Well, Mr. DeFranco did bring it up at the beginning of the hearing that she was unavailable, and then
right, but he didn't explain and ask for a continuance. Then he didn't ask for an accommodation like a phone hearing. He didn't ask for anything until everything was over.
Until Mr. Boris's testimony was over.
So to put the onus on the judge to sua sponte develop the record would create a new rule.
No, I'm not putting the onus on the judge.
That's
to create
exactly
the record.
What you're doing.
What I'm saying is that no record was created because he simply said this isn't going. It wasn't because of the timing of the request. It was because he asked for a continuance after the case had been set for trial. That's the basis. Says if it's a work issue, I'm not going to grant a continuance after the case has been set for trial. That's clearly what the judge is saying in his three or four sentences that he's dealing with the request. So I would submit that it is an abuse of discretion and that the case should be remanded back to the agency.
Okay, well, thank you very much,
you.
Mr. Bratton, and thank you, Ms. Sherman. Next case for argument, well, these are